Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Tuesday, May 22nd. Today we'll be hearing from the best millennial analyst in the game. And no, that's not me. This is your boy Matt Shook, not the best millennial analyst in the game, an AP writer out in Chicago covering the NBA, Pistons follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Today we've got an update on the amazing conference finals, which continue. LeBron is still in the building, in case you're wondering, and also hear from my favorite analyst these days of the NBA, I guess I'll proclaim that, as Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer talks to me about the draft, about the Pistons, some of the second-round prospects that could be on the table for the Pistons at 42, a short conversation we had with him at the Combine last week here in Chicago. And on Pistons playoff playback today, going back to 2003, it's a mixed bag for Pistons fans, as it was a Eastern Conference Finals game for the Pistons, and kind of a surprise year that they made that round, the first year of six that they would make that round, but really a scarring day for the psyche of Pistons fans. We'll get into that later. You probably have a guess if you are a true Pistons fan of what happened during the Eastern Conference Finals that was something that caused Pistons some agony for the next, up until present day, basically. But if you're following the conference finals, you should obviously be checking out the other podcasts on the network, including Locked On Warriors, Locked On Rockets, Locked On Cavs, Locked On Celtics, and also the Locked On NBA show. Another thrilling NBA playoff game on Monday night. Last night, I know that I'm a broken record about this, so I won't rant about it again, but the Celtics pretty much rocked the Boston Celtics 111-102 in a game that wasn't that as close as the final score made it seem. A series is now tied 2-2. 44 for LeBron James. Maybe you've heard of him. He has now 25 career postseason games with 40-plus points, including six this year. The Pistons have been responsible for some of those over the years. Of course, just a ridiculous effort once again from the King. 14 points off the bench for Kyle Korver and a couple of gangsta swats of Jaylen Brown. Well, one pretty good one and then another one too. He had three blocks in all, which is unusual for the Creighton 37-year-old making hustle plays, running all over the court, diving all over the place as well. A fine performance and a throwback of a player from the 2003 draft, which is a draft we'll talk about later on in the podcast. 13 apiece for Tristan Thompson and George Hill of the Cavs. 19 turnovers mostly late, and really a sloppy second half of the Cavs there. That let the Boston Celtics back into the game somewhat, but it didn't really feel much in doubt even down the stretch. Jaylen Brown led a balanced attack with 25 points, although he hoisted 23 field goals, the kind of things your team has to do when you're without your two best players. 16 points and 11 assists for Terry Rozier, who played one of his best games on the road for the Boston Celtics, who have been strong at home, undefeated at home so far in these playoffs. Something has to give, as these two teams have a 2 out of 3 series now that will go back to Boston on Wednesday night in what should be a crazy atmosphere. But you got to figure that the Cavs probably win game 6 at home, and that some way, somehow, LeBron James throws up one of those signature performances and gets the win in Game 5 or Game 7. Now, obviously, I as I've said before, I'm out of the Cleveland Cavaliers prediction game. I shouldn't have ever been in it to begin with, but it just feels like the tide's turning and that the King will somehow find a way to get back to the NBA Finals, where he'll get his butt kicked once again, of course, by the Golden State Warriors in most likely fashion on all those accounts. But speaking of that, tonight, the Warriors taking on the Houston Rockets back in Oakland for Game 4, the second straight game in the Bay Area. Golden State, of course, leading the series 2-1. 9 o'clock game tonight, Eastern, and the Warriors are 8.5-point favorites. How about Golden State declining Kevon Looney's fourth-year option before the season? If you remember, right before the season started, teams have to do this, either decline or pick up those options. Detroit picked up the options for Stanley Johnson and Henry Ellenson, the fourth-year and third-year options for next season, right before last year. Kind of a formality, especially for a bad team like the Pistons with roster spots to spare, and really could use those small rookie contracts to help deal with the fact that we've got a lot of bigger contracts on the cap sheet right now. But with the tax looming and real players on a real winning team, and the possibility of always getting those David West type of veterans to kind of ring chase with you is a little different scenario for the Dubs. But moves like that, whenever this team regresses a little bit and maybe doesn't win the title in a year that they should, like this year, or maybe in the next couple of years going forward, that kind of move might be one that we look back on and shake our heads. Now, Looney is just unrestricted as a free agent this year, so the Warriors could bring him back, but even if that happens and they have to overpay and match an offer sheet that some team sends out to Looney's way, that could cost the Warriors, you know, another player down the road that that really hurts their depth. So an underrated move from before the season started, especially as he's showing off his defensive prowess so far in the Houston Rockets series. And we'll see if Chris Paul, what he's got. James Harden's been fantastic in the playoffs, but, you know, Chris Paul's been pretty good at times, but not the same type of player that we've expected throughout his career. Actually, he's kind of been the same type of player that we've expected throughout his playoff career. And I'm a noted Chris Paul hater, so obviously I come with a little bit of malice in the things I say about the little point guard from the Houston Rockets. But we'll see. I mean, he got to the Western Conference. He got to the Conference Finals for the first time in his career, so give him credit for that. But we'll see if there's some gas left in the tank for the 33-year-old point guard, Chris Paul. But we'll be hearing from Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer, who you should be listening to him on the NBA show on The Ringer Podcast Network. He had some thoughts about the Pistons and how they should move forward, particularly in the NBA draft. And we'll talk about some of the second-round prospects for the Pistons as well. But if your company wants to reach men between the ages of 18 and 44, then you guys should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 and 44. So if that demo sounds good to you, this is your spot. Plus, we have reasonable rates. So email me at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
Later on in the show, we're going to be doing Pistons playoff playback going back to 2003. Since we can't live in the present, we will relive the past. But we got some interviews coming later on this week that I recorded at the NBA Draft Combine in Chicago last week. One of them is going to be with a Hall of Famer who played for the Detroit Pistons, and also one of the first guys that I saw dunk in a game at my alma mater in Kimball High School in Royal Oak. But first, I wanted to share with you guys my quick talk that I had with Kevin O'Connor of the Ringer website. The Ringer website is the one started with Bill Simmons after he was let go by ESPN. And now he's doing that. It's a podcast network. They got a website with the interactive stuff, a lot of videos as well. You should definitely be checking that out. If you're listening to the show, I'm guessing you're at least vaguely familiar with what The Ringer is. Kevin O'Connor has a podcast that he appears on frequently on the NBA and The Ringer Network, the NBA show. And in addition to that, he also appears on the Draft Class podcast, which is part of the NBA show network as well. And they also have the Ringer Draft Guide, which is something that's really great. If you're getting ready for next month's draft, you should be checking that out. You can find that at nbadraft.theringer.com. It was an easy resource for me to use when I was preparing for the combine, and also if someone does something on the 5-on-5 and I wanted to refresh my memory about who that person is that I'm seeing out there. So go on my phone and check it out. It's mobile friendly as well. Check out theringer.com, nbadraft.theringer.com. If I say, who is this and who do I need to know? Who's Troy Brown? What's that guy? So, you know, what's the projection for that and everything? So, but Kevin O'Connor was at the combine doing obviously some of his prep for it, and I caught up with him. Talked to him about Alize Johnson of Missouri State, as I did an article for the Springfield News Leader on him and used some of the comments there. But separately, I recorded this quick little interview that I did about the Detroit Pistons and where they're at and where they're headed and where they should be headed here at the draft. So here's my interview with Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer. Here with Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer. Kevin, what do you think about, obviously we don't know what the front office situation is, we don't know what the coach situation is right now, but if you were drafting for the Pistons, you may be a little thin on the wings. What are you looking at, kind of one of these boom or bust second round prospects as a guy who, you know, maybe could turn into something as a diamond in the rough?
I think in today's league, you can never go wrong with one of those types of players. Somebody who can defend multiple positions for you. One of the guys that I really like this week is Josh Okogie. He's probably maybe a little bit of head the Pistons range, but you never know where some of these guys drop. Nobody would have expected Jordan Bell to drop to the 38th pick last year for Golden State. So Josh Okogie this week, I think, has showed his multi-positional ability on the defensive end of the floor, but also the offense with his three-point shooting. And then a little bit off the dribble that needs to develop. But I think he's a super intriguing guy that I'd look for if I'm a Pistons fan.
Is there someone else that may be worth, you know, moving up in the second round or possibly late first round that could help on the wing? I mean, there's so many guys that are in that late first round area for the wing, but is there, you know, someone who might fit in with the Pistons and otherwise more guys?
How about a guy like a Melvin Frazier type from Tulane? He's 6'6" with a 7'2" wingspan. Again, one of those guys, maybe move up a little bit too much for him. He might be in the 20-ish range, but again, another one of those type of guys who can defend multiple positions, really lean, really long, and super, super athletic as well with a good three-point shot. I think he's somebody, really, any team can use a good wing in today's league, and I think that's somebody the Pistons should be targeting.
And as they're looking at the front office for the Pistons, is there something that they need to do as an organization, one thing, to kind of modernize and maybe get to the level of everyone else?
I think whatever it is, they need to be connected from ownership to the front office down to the coaching staff. There needs to be really a connected mission statement in a way of what they want to build. I think anytime your front office has continuity in a way moving forward where there's a single message that they really want to follow, that's a good thing. But clearly, with the changes that happened within the past year, they weren't able to work that out.
Thanks a lot, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you having me.
So a big thanks to Kevin O'Connor for taking the time to talk to us there. But along those lines of continuity that he talked about with the Pistons front office and all the way down to the coaching staff and whatnot, maybe we should be encouraged, I guess, that the Pistons are apparently taking their time to figure out the front office situation. I thought something would happen with the president of basketball operations, at least maybe toward the end of last week, especially with the NBA kind of all convened here in Chicago. That was a blind guess, but when you look at the draft coming up next month, the calendar, the free agency after that, you need to start at the top and move down the chain of some of these lists of hires. So, you know, you're looking at, you know, Toronto and Orlando still don't have coaches, but they have strong and stable front offices in place. Detroit, you know, they have nothing right now. And along those lines, wanted to pass along maybe some of the latest news in the coaching search, not from the Pistons, but from another team. Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN had a report that Orlando, that they're taking a real close look at Kelvin Sampson for their head coaching job. I mean, probably good news for Detroit fans, not a name that would upset fans too much if he went off the board there as well. Sampson, the head coach at Houston, which nearly beat Michigan in round two if it wasn't for Jordan Poole's ridiculous shot there at the end of that game. He was the Oklahoma coach for many years, got in trouble with some of the cell phone scandaling of texting guys too much and all that kind of stuff. Also coached at Indiana for a couple years and left a bad mark on that program as well in only a couple years' time. But I wanted to talk about a couple of the names that Kevin O'Connor brought up as possible second-round targets or maybe even moving up to the first round or early second round for the Pistons there. Pistons slated to pick at number 42 and their only pick in the NBA draft. Josh Okogie of Georgia Tech, a shooter, a wing who's projected to go late first round right now. Kevin also brought up Melvin Frazier, a high flyer, unrefined player from Tulane who's been shooting up the draft boards after the combine, now probably also pegged as a late first rounder as well. The Pistons probably have to settle for the scraps under those guys, but those guys are among a glut of like late first round projected wings that it's going to be kind of a pick your flavor there of the guy that you like more than others of the teams that are going to be looking for those types of players. And there are going to be a lot of teams looking for those types of players. So maybe a lot of smoke screens involved in terms of what team really likes what prospects, but the group starts, you know, in the late lottery with guys like Troy Brown of Oregon, Lonnie Walker of Miami, you got Zaire Smith of Texas Tech, Chandler Hutchinson of Boise State, the young kid Simons of the IMG Academy, you got the Jacob Evans of Cincinnati. And the Pistons, again, they will have to settle for which of those types of guys that might slip. Or maybe it's realistic for them to trade up into the early second round and trade up for one of those guys that slips. But a couple of names that I wanted to throw out to you guys that you probably may know if you know even a little bit about college basketball, one of them is Dante Ingram of Loyola. That name probably sounds familiar. He was the best NBA prospect from that Ramblers team that made the Final Four. I guess since you can't really suit up Sister Jean, probably Ingram might be the next best option for the Ramblers as you're talking about the Pistons in the draft. But another one to remember is Raleigh Alkins, another guy like Ingram who might actually be possibly there for the taking at number 42. He played at Arizona with DeAndre Ayton, a shooting guard, just a great upper body. The thing I like about him, in addition to some pretty good shooting, is his strong perimeter defense, athletic ability out on the wing there. One of those guys that during the combine here, he was playing in the 5-on-5s, and he was in the 5-on-5s last year as well. He was a guy that was in the combine process last year. And right when the whistle blew to start those games last week, He was ready to compete and getting in a stance and harassing guys on the perimeter. He has huge shoulders and upper body for a 6'4" guy. Just a lot to like athletically and also makeup-wise. I saw him play in high school at the Tournament of Champions in Springfield, Missouri, a high-level prep tournament that I used to cover when I was a prep reporter down in Missouri. But Alkins had a mature body and game back then. He played for Christ the King, the prep school in New York, one of the nation's most storied programs as well. And you got to love a New York City perimeter guy. And he's one that I'd really love to see playing for the Pistons next year. So a couple names to keep in mind. They're not my official draft focus guys that I'd like the Pistons to pick up. But Dante Ingram and Raleigh Alkins are definitely on my radar in terms of guys that might be nice second-round finds for the Pistons. But we'll get more into the draft as it gets closer. Obviously, we'll be dissecting who the Pistons bring in for workouts and whether it matters, whether the guys who are analyzing these workouts are going to be the same ones making the selections next month with the NBA draft looming on June 21st, by the way. So we've got a little bit less than a month until draft time for the Detroit Pistons and the rest of the NBA. But today, in Pistons playoff playback, since we can't live in the present, we will be reliving the past, going back to 2003. But a team looking forward is the Detroit Lions. We've got the new coach in Detroit in the Locked On Lions podcast with Matt Derry of Detroit Radio. You should be checking that out every day, along with all the other NBA podcasts, one for every NFL team and one for every NBA team, adding the MLB podcast as well. And also check out the landing page for all the shows at LockedOnSports.com. We are the Locked On Network, your team every day. It is now time for Pistons playoff playback, going back to 2003, which means it's 15 years ago to the day of one of the, turns out, it seemed like one of the best days of Pistons history at the time, turned out to be part of the one of the worst days of Pistons history, as it turns out. I remember well one of those college summers where I was living at home. You know, my parents hated me probably. I probably hated them for some stupid reason. But, you know, working for the city, taking care of kids at the drop-in center during the day, classic after your freshman year of college job. I guess it was after my sophomore year of college, if I'm remembering correctly now. Living at my parents' house in the summer. Weird times. But anyway, the Pistons made a surprise run in the playoffs, took out Orlando in 7 in round 1 the first year that they had 7-game first-round series, and thankfully for the Pistons because they trailed 3-1 in that series. Then they took out Iverson and Philly in 6 and on to the Eastern Conference Finals to play the New Jersey Nets, the defending Eastern Conference champions who the year previous got swept by the Lakers in the 2002 NBA Finals after they took out Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals, after Boston took out the Pistons in round 2. So the Nets were the favorites to get back there, despite the fact that the Pistons and coach Rick Carlisle in year 2 were the one seed in the Eastern Conference after a nice 50-32 regular season, the second straight 50-32 season in Rick Carlisle's only two seasons as coach of the Pistons. And the Nets came in as the two seed under the Pistons. So that was, of course, the Nets with Jason Kidd and Kenyon Martin and Richard Jefferson. And the Nets got 2 2-point victories at the Palace in games 1 and 2. I was at game 1 of this series. Chauncey makes a couple free throws to tie the game with about 22 seconds left, but with no shot clock, Jason Kidd dribbles it out and takes a fadeaway go-ahead jumper with 1.4 seconds left, makes it over Mehmet Okur, who switched over, and Chauncey Billups as well. And then in a last-ditch effort after a timeout, the Pistons, or Tayshaun Prince, threw the ball towards the rim for Mehmet Okur, who missed the layup at the buzzer. A tough play, but certainly a makeable shot for him, and the Nets won. We were deflated at the Palace that night. But game 2, Corliss missed a late shot, Chauncey missed a 3 that would have won close to the buzzer as well. Pistons lose by 2 again, go down 2-0. And before game 3, the series shifts back to New Jersey's, but most importantly, before that game was the 2003 NBA Draft Lottery brought live on ESPN. That brings us to our Pistons playoff playback for May 21st, 2003, 15 years ago today. The Pistons made a nondescript deal with the Vancouver Grizzlies in the summer of 1997, actually, as coach Doug Collins traded Otis Thorpe for a first-round draft choice with escalating protections for over the years. And Vancouver, which eventually moved over to Memphis, was so bad over the years that they kept holding on to that pick, and those protections kept dwindling away as the years went on. Otis Thorpe, 35 years old at the time, and he would only play 46 games for Vancouver that season before being traded to Sacramento that year in 1997. So in 2003, the Grizzlies had used up almost all of their protections and would only keep the pick if it were the number one pick in the draft. And then the following year, the Pistons would get it whenever it was bestowed to them. And of course, that year, a guy named LeBron was everyone's pick to be the number one pick, and especially if Memphis kept it. And so I just watched the whole thing on YouTube again. I would encourage you to do the same. The final two picks came down to the Memphis Grizzlies and the Cleveland Cavaliers, and Jerry West, who's running the Grizzlies at the time. You could see his face as they pulled out number three for Denver, number two for the Memphis Grizzlies that had their logo on it, not the Pistons on there. So, you know, in what would normally be a great situation for the team to have their logo picked out at number two, the logo himself had an amazing expression on his face as he realized that he just went from having LeBron James for the next 15 years to having nothing and having no pick in that draft. And the floundering franchise that was the Vancouver Grizzlies turned Memphis Grizzlies would continue to struggle, you know, for many years going forward. So they lost the pick, and the Pistons instead got the pick in the best draft in NBA history, number two. So they would use it to pick a young guy out of Serbia who would probably go on to a Hall of Fame NBA career. So really, if you were a Pistons fan that night, you're really just on top of the world. You can remember I can remember that being a joyous night as a Pistons fan, despite the game, the way that the game went on the court. We were on cloud nine. We had, you know, maybe this kid from Serbia, maybe this Carmelo Anthony who just won the national championship as a freshman for Syracuse, Dwayne Wade's out there. Really, you couldn't go wrong. Of course, I was a Central Michigan guy, so Chris Kaman was high on my list as well. But when you get number two in the best draft in NBA history, certainly you can't go wrong, and you'd have a multiple times All-Star, a Hall of Famer, joining your team again. And we'll get into that pick maybe a little bit as the draft gets closer this season. But not only did the Pistons have to be awarded the pick that turned into some number two pick from Serbia that night, they also lost the basketball game, falling 97-85 to the Nets en route to a series sweep for New Jersey there. Jason Kidd, 34 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists, dominant effort from him. This was peak Jason Kidd. He was second in MVP voting the year before. And remember, this was all happening with Kidd approaching free agency in the prime of his career, and there was a lot of talk of him joining the Spurs in one of the ultimate NBA what-ifs. And they were like, again, as I said, they would go on and play the Tim Duncan and the Spurs in the final, with San Antonio winning in six, although it wasn't really that close. They didn't really sweat too much, and you probably missed that finals because it was San Antonio against New Jersey, and why would you watch it? But Kidd ended up staying in New Jersey with a six-year deal, making $99 million, and the Spurs did just fine without him. They didn't want to upset the ecosystem with Tony Parker as he was emerging and turning into one of the game's best point guards himself, and everything worked out fine except for whoever the Pistons drafted in the 2003 draft that year. But give us a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Schuch, S-C-H-O-C-H underscore after that, and also Locked On Pistons on Twitter again. Reach out to me. Let me know where you were during that 2003 draft lottery and what you thought of the Pistons' future being the Eastern Conference finalists already and then adding one of the gems from the greatest draft in NBA history. But also give us a follow, a like on the Facebook page at Locked On Pistons-Matt Schuch, and give us a rating and review on iTunes as well. Got some more content from the Combine I'm eager to share with you guys the rest of the week. And also, of course, we are on Coach, General Manager, President of Basketball Operations Watch as well. Programming note, we're going to be switching down to three shows a week, probably starting next week. But like I said, if we get some news with coaches' situations, we'll boost that up to four or five times a week in the short interim time. But lean times coming for Pistons news, you would think, after that all gets sorted out, and we might drop the schedule a little bit. But again, thanks for listening. Thanks for all your support of Locked On Pistons. This is your host, Matt Schuch, and have a good one, everyone.